Hello.
Hi. Thanks for joining us. We'll be getting started soon. Could you hear me?
Yes.
Okay.
Karen?
I don't believe Karen's in yet. This is Melinda, and I'm your host, and we'll be getting started shortly here.
Oh, okay.
Hi, my name is Danny Goleman.
Hi, Danny. We'll be getting started shortly.
Okay. Thank you.
Hello, this is Joni calling from Ohio.
Hi, Joni. We'll be getting started shortly.
Okay, thank you.
Hi, this is Ivy.
Hi, this is Diana.
Hi.
So are we just waiting now?
I guess.
We will be getting started shortly here, so just we'll give it a couple more minutes.
Mary Ellen. Mary from Indiana.
Hi, Mary. We'll be getting started soon.
Okay.
Karen Scholl.
Hi, Karen. I was hoping to hear from you pretty soon. Like, where's Karen? We'll give him a few more minutes here before we get started.
Yeah, let's do that.
And Karen, once we get ready to get started, I'm going to mute everybody out and then mute myself or unmute myself, and then you unmute yourself so we make sure we're both there. And that's going to be star six.
Right. Thanks.
Uh-huh.
Elise. Oh, there we go.
Karen, I'm getting quite a bit of feedback, so I'm going to go ahead and mute everybody, and then when you're ready, you
That's
do
great.
Star six. Okay, Karen, have you unmuted yourself yet?
Are you there, Melina?
I am. Are you there?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Do you want to get started yet, or you want to hang on a few minutes?
What time are we at?
I'm saying about 8:02 is what I'm looking at.
Let's wait just a couple minutes.
Okay.
How are you, Melinda?
Well, I'm doing good, Karen. So Mike and I are celebrating Valentine's Day a little early tonight.
Oh, really?
We are in the middle of a storm right now with 50, 60-mile-an-hour winds, and we're going to do this teleseminar by candlelight.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Very romantic, you two.
Isn't it so? I'm telling you. So that's what we're doing tonight. So, and so I'm going to be reading this by candlelight. So if I skip a line or something, we'll go back and figure it out. So, only in Indiana.
I'm glad you set off the questions. Otherwise, we'd be kind of guessing them, wouldn't we?
Yeah, we would. So thank goodness for being prepared and organized and printing things off ahead of time. There is something to be said for that.
Yeah. Okay. Anything you'd like to start, Melinda? We'll go ahead.
Okay, great. So we'd like to welcome everybody tonight to tonight's teleseminar with Karen Scholl. I'm your host, Melinda Garish. My husband, Mike, and I, we own Cutting Up Stables, which is an overnight boarding facility in Shirley, Indiana, and we're just east of Indianapolis. So please stop by in and see us whenever you're looking for a place to stay overnight with your horses. So normally we're not this windy, and I don't know if you heard, but we're going to do this teleseminar by candlelight tonight. We're experiencing a pretty bad storm in our area. So, okay, well, let's get started, Karen. Karen, the more that we do this seminar, the more obvious it is that, you know, many of these horse owners really have the desire to learn more about the animals that we love. And tonight, so we're going to cover the topics that we're going to do tonight are going to be about bits and bridles and recommending reading and resources and bolting and mama's bite, fear, and that does not have to do with flying on an airplane, by the way, and and groundwork circling and desensitizing and some clinic locations. So,
wow, we better get busy.
We need to get busy. So, okay, we're going to go ahead and start with the first one. This is from Danny Gorman, and I heard that he did join in tonight, so I know he's listening. So it says, hi, Karen. I have a two-part question, if I may please. One, I've heard and read that when the bridle is on the horse, there should be a one-fold, two-fold of the lip, where the bit pressure is against the horse's lip on each side. Your opinion would be appreciated. The second part of that question is, on what type of horse would a bitless bridle work better than a snaffle bit, and how would one make the transition from a snaffle bit to a bitless bridle safe, as and being safety being the number one concern for both the horse and the rider? And again, your opinion would be appreciated.
Okay. Let's talk about and headstalls in general. And one of the things that we're doing, I'm actually calling in from a two-week course here in Bumblebee, Arizona. It's a Southwest Winter Camp, and it's the extended study course. And all the folks that are in the class are actually in the other room at the ranch house listening in and participating in a teleseminar tonight. And this is one of the topics we'll bring this week. And it's a pretty extensive subject, and many opinions and many perspectives. The style of riding that I follow and study, have studied for many years and practice with my horses, my personal goal is to one day develop what's called a finished bridle horse, to finish a horse. So California Vaquero style of riding is my personal interest, but I've ridden, you know, English and all different kinds of things. But if you want to simplify what the headgear really is on a horse, is it's simply giving the horse direct through hands, using extensions called reins, nose of or the head of the horse, using steady pressure on the head of the horse to the direction of where you would like that horse to go. Now, horses, as we all know, have a mind of their own, and sometimes they have preferences. So depending on not the equipment that you put on the horse's head, but the thought that that horse is having is what really, truly directs and gives that guidance to the horse. Now, some people have the impression or are told that a bit or a bigger bit or some sort of bit, regardless of what it is, will be better able to control the horse. And the real answer to that is, I've asked people all over, you know, who's been told that you need a bigger bit? Well, not an untrue statement, but the bigger bit is a bit of knowledge. The knowledge is what really influences the horse. Control of the horse is an illusion, as most people that have had horses more than a couple of weeks, you know, probably discover. But you can't control the horse. You can certainly learn how to influence the mind. So really what our communication of the horse is, you know, and I'm going to say the nose, and that includes inside the mouth, you're just communicating direction to the horse. But if the horse has resistance or wants to go back somewhere else, go a different direction, go with the other horses or fill in the blank, there isn't much of anything you can put on a horse that will find what made up its mind. And usually it will make up its mind when it's afraid. So horses being prey animals, this is a pretty common thing that we get into. Now, how I teach people with horses is I teach them on the ground. And right now what this group has been doing with their horses is they've been doing things on the ground with a halter and lead. And it's interesting because people think, well, you know, we're not riding the horse. And that's a common misconception that people have. They think, well, I'm not training the horse unless I'm riding the horse. Well, you know what? You're training the horse as soon as the screen door, you know, bangs shut on the way out of the barn. You're always training that horse, whether you're on the ground, feeding the horse, picking up the feed for the feeder, or riding it, or, you know, trailer loading it, or filling the blank. That is horsemanship. It's a way of with horses. So on the ground, the first thing to do to be safe with a horse is to teach it to give to the feel of steady pressure around the nose. So, for example, today we had hula hoops on these horses, and the horses were understanding, and they were staying inside the bubble of comfort, which is a concept that I teach. Well, these horses, I had some people saying, well, use it as a bit. And people went, use it as a bit? Sure. In the horse's mouth, and all of a sudden this big hula hoop becomes a bit, and people start steering their horses from the ground using this, you know, the hula hoop. But if you do that, then it's not going to get any better when you get up on the horse's back. So to me, safety is knowledge. The more knowledge that you have, the safer that you are. And a lot of people deal with fear and want to put a big bit on a horse, and I've done that myself. I went down, you know, went into a tack store, and I was completely and I, you know, I've got everything. I had tie downs, martingales, you know, shank bits, the whole thing. My horse was still running away. What I didn't realize I needed to do was find out the reason she was trying to run away from me. It was because she didn't understand me, and she was trying to escape from this confusion and frustration she was experiencing with me. When I started to change that, develop the communication, you could understand, respond in respect, then all of a sudden she quit trying to run away from me because she understood me. So one of the analogies I've given to this group here, you know, when your horse is trying to run away from you and get away from you or pull on you, it's because they don't speak the language that you do. And so we're like in a foreign country, but now we're yelling at them. You get pretty uncomfortable too in that situation and try to get away. So the thing about bits to understand the safety of it is to have knowledge behind it. The more knowledge you have, shoot, you can ride a horse without a bridle or without anything on its head, period, if you have the right amount of knowledge. So the study that I teach people is first on the ground, halter, and teaching that horse to follow a feel on the ground, lateral flexion, backing up from steady pressure, coming forward, turning in each direction, disengaging the hindquarters, all of those things are first taught on the ground. And then I people know, okay, now we're going to ride, just, you know, we have the saddle and all that, and they step up on the horse with Paul and Leon, one lead. Because they're like, oh my gosh, you're the doctor. I go, well, why would you die? If all those things had an understanding on the ground, why would it be any different just because he's up on his back? So you can teach a horse every single effort up on the horse from first step. By the end of this course, people will be amazed at what they can do from the horse's back. But the reason is you've done it all on the ground. That's the reason.
Mm-hmm. Karen, you're breaking in and out, and I'm not sure if it's because we're having trouble here or if you need to relocate where you're at, but just make aware that you're breaking in and out from here anyway.
Okay. Well, let me move because I am in this ranch kind of in the middle of nowhere. I don't know how the reception can be kind of funny.
Okay.
So let me go ahead and move here.
Okay, I'm not hearing you.
Okay.
Try it now.
Okay.
Is that any better?
How's that? Is that better?
That's sounding better, so it must be different.
Okay. It's okay. I just went outside.
Okay.
It's warmer here than there.
And with probably not 60-mile-an-hour winds right now.
No, this is great here. Wish you were here, but
let's go.
But I won't rock it in. That's okay. So does that make sense, Melinda? It's really about having the knowledge around it. Now, as far as when do I transition, I don't have anything against any kind of a tool that is not designed with leverage. Okay, I don't like any kind of a tool that has leverage, that puts a leverage device into uneducated hands. Okay? And by a leverage device, what I mean is with when anything goes through a pulley or a ring or has a shank on it, anything like that, what leverage means is I feel 2 pounds of pressure in my hands, but depending on how the leverage device is designed, the horse could feel 10 pounds of pressure. But I may ride along. I see people do it all the time. I've done it myself. I've gone, well, I have really light hands. And the horse is tossing its head and tucked its chin to its chest and going, no, you don't. Because to the untrained hands, the person with untrained feel, they don't understand that 2 pounds of pressure could feel like 10 pounds to the horse. So that's why I really like to have people start riding with non-leverage devices such as a rope hackamore. Because if you can't ride a horse without a bit, then you probably should be down on the ground not riding that horse. And that's just the truth of it. Because you could put, I don't care, you could put a gag bit, shank, you know, tie down martingale thing, and that horse can tuck its chin to its chest and take off with you. And it's happened. It's happened to me. So if I told anybody, well, go and get a bigger bit, I'd be just putting them, it'd be a disservice to them, I'd be putting them in danger. Now, when my horse understands that my seat transitions up, transitions down, the direction comes from the steady pressure of my legs, when I don't need a bit to ride my horse, then I've earned the right to introduce a bit to the inside of the horse's mouth. And think about it. You're putting a piece of metal in one of the most sensitive areas on a horse's body. So, and you're putting a snaffle bit in. Usually you start with a snaffle bit, and everybody thinks, oh, a snaffle bit is so gentle. A snaffle bit is one of the cruelest bits in the wrong hands because snaffle bits are designed for lateral flexion. The mouthpiece in the middle is usually jointed, not always, but what a snaffle bit is it's direct one-to-one pressure. When I have 1 pound of pressure in my hand, the horse feels 1 pound of pressure on the bit. There's no leverage involved in it. But you need, in order to keep the mouthpiece, and a mouthpiece can be solid. A snaffle bit does not mean that the mouthpiece is jointed necessarily. A lot of driving bits have an unbroken mouthpiece, and that's a snaffle bit. It just means a one-to-one ratio. When you add a shank, even a small shank, a short shank like a Tom Thumb or something like that, people say, well, that's not that bad. But what's happening is you're feeling 1 pound of pressure, but the horse is feeling 5. And people don't always understand that if it's not explained to them. So the other thing about this is what people do, if they're not using their seat for transition up, transition down, and their legs for their turns, then people tend to overuse the bit. And if you pull on 2 reins with a snaffle bit and it's a jointed mouthpiece, it will fold in half and become one of the tallest ports you'll ever see on a mouthpiece on a bit. And that's why a lot of horses being ridden in a snaffle bit with somebody with uneducated hands, they'll tend to put their nose forwards because when that bit folds in half inside their mouth, they have to go forward so they can, instead of that point hitting them in the roof of the mouth, it folds kind of out in front. And everybody says, well, your horse is traveling with its nose out, so let's put a tie down on it and tuck his head down and get him into the right position. So instead of looking at it and saying, well, why is he doing that? Maybe it's me. We go, oh, well, that's, you know, that darn horse, and let's, you know, tie his head down. So snaffle bits are designed for lateral flexion, and you should have a little more pressure on one ring than the other to keep that mouthpiece straight. So it seems like, you know, a pretty little question, but it's a pretty big answer and a very vast study. But I will mention something here. One of the common misunderstandings with people is they say, well, you need to have a wrinkle, two wrinkles. I've heard three wrinkles when you fit a bit into the horse's mouth. And let me tell you, you should fit a bit into the horse's mouth like you fit your underwear. No wrinkles. Because what happens is if you fit it that tight into the horse's mouth, you have to have that much pressure plus some for the horse to feel the difference. And you can do this little exercise. It's pretty fun. You can take a bit, any kind of bit will do, have somebody hold the head stall and put your hand over the mouthpiece and push down hard enough to form a couple of wrinkles, and then close your eyes and have somebody pick up the reins and see how long it takes for you to be able to feel the change in those rings. And it's a lot. It's a lot of pressure because you've got so much pressure pushing down that it's that much more pressure to even feel the difference. If you set it to where that bit is sitting in the horse's mouth comfortably, and it's just positioned just right, not too low, not too high, but the horse has to kind of pick it up and hold it, boy, you have somebody pick up those reins, close your eyes when it's held lightly like that in your mouth. Number one, it feels more comfortable right away, as you can imagine. But you can feel the reins instantly. So there's so much myth and misinformation in the horse industry. It's just it's amazing. You'd think it wouldn't surprise me anymore, but it does. And this is one of the most common ones. But people notice a huge difference because they'll look at my horse's bit when I'm riding, and they'll go, gosh, the bit is so loose. And I'll go, yeah, look, and I'll just barely pick up my reins and shift my weight, and he is just right there for me. So try that yourself. It's a really good way to prove to yourself that putting one, two, or even three wrinkles, you know, horses, that poor things, they look like a happy alligator. You know, if a horse is running around being ridden looking like a happy alligator or rooting at the bit and, you know, things like that, there's something wrong. We need to make an adjustment and start questioning the things that you're being told.
Okay. Well, Karen, I still think you need to do that video on myths with the horses and stuff, because that's definitely a good one that needs to be, like, on the front page.
Well, I think it should be a weekly series on RFD-TV, so we still wouldn't cover it all.
It would.
Now in our 20th season.
Yeah. I think so. So, but, yeah, I think you've got something there. I think you need to go with it. So there's still another question on bits, and so I'm going to go ahead and read it, and let's see if we've addressed that or if we need to go further into it. But this one's from Jill. And she says, I have a sensitive 3-year-old filly with about 20 rides on her. She is very light and soft on line, follows a fill, and I can do lateral flexion with the halter. When I'm riding her in a snaffle, as I pick up on the rein for lateral flexion or to direct her feet, she gets tight and bracy in her neck and will sometimes grind her teeth. I started her in a rope halter, and she does pretty good with this. How should I go about getting her comfortable with the bit? She doesn't seem to mind having the bit in her mouth. I have fed her with it on. She just does this whenever I pick up on the reins and make contact with her mouth. I've tried being very slow and gentle with this. Someone suggested to me that I need to be more assertive and just work through it and get the job done. I am worried that if that isn't the right answer, I will put something deep in her. I've had an equine dentist float her teeth, and she doesn't have any wolf teeth. So do you want to address that any further?
Sure. You know, and you're on the right track. Kind of the first thing as you were describing it was teeth. You want to kind of think about that a little bit, okay? And people need to check that out. Horses' teeth grow throughout their lifetime. And for whatever reason, and I've asked equine dentists, have you ever looked into a horse's mouth that didn't need some kind of leveling out and work? And all of them say no, and I know many of them. So, you know, please rule out that it's not, you know, just the teeth, because when horses have a ramp or a shape in their teeth, they can't turn their head. Their lower jaw has to be able to move freely side to side, not to mention for masticating their food and things like that as well. But that's where a lot of times you'll see resistance. What I would do is I would go back to what she's comfortable in. I'd go back to a rope halter, or better yet, a rope hackamore that doesn't you know, has a little bit different design to it. And I would just get her to where she's so comfortable and so confident on that, that she's just so willing, even under when she has a moment of resistance or something like that, if I need to put pressure on a horse, I want to be outside of their mouth when I'm doing that. Then my next transition is I would take a nice big soft rope, like a lead rope, and put it in the horse's mouth and start teaching the horse to follow a bit made out of rope. And just going, hey, let's build your confidence inside of your mouth here. Then make sure that when you put your hands, you know, what you're really doing when you're using a bit and you put pressure on it, you can imagine you're putting your hands into that horse's mouth. You just simply have an extension, because we don't have big, long gorilla arms to be able to reach their mouth. You know, you're wanting to feel clear into that horse's mouth and make sure that you're not pulling on that horse's mouth. And it's really hard to tell sometimes. That horse is looking for comfort. And as the group here has been noticing today, you know, our muscle memory kicks in. We're not even aware that we're pulling on that horse's mouth rather than holding and allowing that horse to get into the comfort. So those are kind of the things that I would do, is to just rebuild that horse's confidence. I think you're absolutely right on to question yourself and say, you know what, I want to go backwards rather than thinking, okay, I've got to get after this horse. Because if you're getting willingness in other areas, it seems to me that that would indicate a willing nature to the horse, and something is not quite right. You know, when you change the condition, put a piece of metal in the horse's mouth, and it could be something you've already, you know, you just heard a minute ago going, ooh, I didn't realize that a snaffle bit will fold in half inside the horse's mouth and you know, cause resistance like that. The other thing you can do is, what I do with horses is I have them wear a snaffle bit. It sounds like you've already done that because the horse is okay with a snaffle bit in their mouth. It's just when you go to pick up pressure, I would get down on the ground and just use your reins, reach up over the horse's neck or across their back or saddle, and just start teaching that horse to follow a feel from the bit in the mouth, you know, just as you're walking. And just let that horse know, hey, just follow a feel, and then I'm going to drop it again. Follow a feel. Pick it up, follow a feel, I'm going to drop it again. Because sometimes when people get on a horse and get a bit in their mouth, all of a sudden, there's no comfort. You know, we pick up and we're told to collect them and hold them in a soft feel and get them in frame and all these things. And that's not what a young horse needs. A young horse needs to just have their confidence build, use that bit a little bit just to get the communication, and then let it go. Turn it loose. You know, turn it loose on a loose rein and just let that horse carry that bit. And keep understanding that you're not going to use the bit to turn the horse. You're going to use the bit if it doesn't turn. You're not going to use the bit to stop the horse. You're going to use the bit if the horse doesn't stop from your seat transition. So to me, the bit is a very advanced tool. Unfortunately, there's not many examples of that out there in the horse industry. And horses can and do figure it out, but I really appreciate this person's looking within themselves and saying, okay, what am I doing? Because I don't want to put something in there that I'm going to have to deal with forever and ever and ever. You know, and people see me ride Bergante, and he still roots the bit from the training he had in his early life because he didn't get comfort. So he's got a pattern of behavior that, yes, it can absolutely last a lifetime. Is it better? Sure. But he still has this instinct to keep trying to pull the comfort, you know, or the discomfort out of my hands and get the comfort back. So it's some things to think about, but maybe you can just go back to the ground and start with a rope, start with the bit, but just do some things from the ground to help rebuild that horse's confidence.
Okay. Okay. So you ready to go to the next question then? We're going to kind of switch gears here, and this one's from Naomi. And are you ready for her question, Karen?
Sure.
Okay. It says, hi, I was hoping you could please refer me to some resources that could help me with two problems I'm having with my 20-year-old Arabian mare. First problem is that we trail ride once a week, and she's always digging three-quarters of the way home. I have tried turning her in circles and zigzagging her, but she's so wound up that it doesn't slow her down, and those turns and zigzags don't seem to bother her. Her second issue is she's very marish around gelding. She squirts out urines, sways her butt, pins her ears back, and squeals when she's facing a gelding or getting or get side by side to one. Could you please direct me with some books or DVDs that could help us? So she's looking
why,
for material.
Why, yes, I can. On the website, KarenShoal.com, you will learn what's missing in both of those scenarios. What's missing right there is your mare does not view you in the leadership position. She just doesn't. And the only way to establish leadership, and leadership is not being the dominant or the boss horse or anything like that. It's that horse, if she has time to, you know, flash at geldings and become mare-ish and jig home and all those things, it's because you're not really asking that much of her. And so she has time to kind of, you know, go off on her own little thoughts there, which is not her fault. Any horse would do that. We do that. If we're listening to somebody that's not very provocative and boring or important to us, our mind wanders and we start having our own thoughts. So it's kind of, you know, the idle hands are the devil's workshop. Well, in this case, the idle hooves, you know, are the devil's workshop, and that's really what's getting you in trouble there. When a horse wants to jig home, it's because, you know, people call that term barn sour, but they're not sour on the barn. They're sweet on the barn. They're sour on you and what you're, or what you're asking them to do. So one of the things you can do for a horse that wants to jig home is, and it sounds kind of weird, but the reason a horse wants to jig home is because when they get home, they get unsaddled, get fed some grain, a couple of carrots, brush them out, you know, and they're happy, happy, happy. So one of the most extreme cases I had was a little Pasofina horse, and this horse would just, I don't care what you did, you could go sideways or backwards, and that horse was scrambling to get home. And it took a while, granted, because it was pretty deeply ingrained behavior, but I took this horse and I said, okay, you want to get back to the barn, me too. And this horse, I'd head back to the barn, and it would just, you know, trot on out to the barn. We'd get back to the barn, and I would circle around the barn. I'd trot around. Of course, you know, people knew I was trying to help this horse with a pattern of behavior, and we did the hard stuff. When we got back to the barn, because this horse was headed straight for the hitching rail, oh, no, we went past the hitching rail. We went around, paka, paka, paka. We went up and around. We went around, turn around, turn around, turn around, and we just, you know, and this horse was going, oh, my gosh, you know, I'm tearing around the barn, doing all this stuff, and then I headed out and let that horse eat grass on the way out. And pretty soon that horse started thinking about going to the barn, and it was like, okay, we're going to the barn, here we go, now we go back, and it was like zoom, 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 ride, to all this stuff, and then I'd head straight on out and let that horse catch his breath and eat grass out on the trail. Well, this took about a week, and pretty soon the horse was jigging to get out on the trail and dragging its feet to get back to the barn. It's like, I'm not so sure I want to go back to the barn. Okay. So it's always looking, horses in, you know, people, and that's why I compare it horsemanship for women, is that if you look at it, you know, dealing with a horse is kind of like trying to convince a two-year-old to put their clothes on so you could, you know, go outside the house. And if a two-year-old doesn't want to put their clothes on, you have to get pretty creative and pretty thoughtful of how do you change that kid's mind, the child's mind, to be able to want to do that. You can't make them do that. Or you have a big fight, you know, and everybody's mad, you know, even just leaving the house. So it's the same thing with a horse. You have to start thinking about what the pattern is that the horse is revealing to you. So the thing about being a mare on the trail, and I asked my group this the other day when we started the course, because somebody brought up mares, horses being mare-ish, and I'll say, well, I have three mares over here. Do you know how I can tell when they're in season? Everybody said, how? And I said, I can't. So, well, what do you mean you can't? I said, I can't, because they don't have time to do that. They're busy. They're on the job. I'm aware of every step, where their foot is, what they're doing, what they're thinking. And when they start thinking those kinds of things, it's just like a teenager. You know, if they start having those kinds of thoughts, you need to get them busy. Keep them in sports. Keep them in activities. Keep them so busy that they don't have time to get themselves into trouble. So it's kind of those things, but people don't understand this, and so they, you know, put the horse on regimate, even getting mares spayed. You know, and I'm not saying that that's a bad thing, but to me, that's kind of a band-aid to something. If you just looked at it with a little bit of psychology, you could have maybe been able to sort through that problem on your own. It's not the horse's problem. It's our lack of understanding and what to do about it.
Okay. All right. Well, very good. Karen, our wind is so strong here. My furniture is shaking in the house, and we don't have earthquakes out here. It's like, oh, my God.
Ow.
I know, it's crazy.
There's no place like home.
Oh, I'm telling you.
It's not tornado season or anything, is it?
It really isn't. So, but if you lose me, keep going, and we'll touch base later, I guess.
Okay.
We're going to discuss bolting and groundwork, and you can go from there.
All right.
So, okay. Well, this one is from Millette, and she says, "Hi, Karen. Thanks for having the free teleseminar. I'm looking forward to it. My question is about bolting. I have a 5-year-old gelding who has a tendency to bolt when he is afraid. I have been told to use the one rein stop and pull his head around to get him to stop. The problem I have had with this is threefold. First, he's very strong, and when he locks up, I simply do not have enough strength to match him. Second, I ride on irrigation ditches, which don't allow the room to make a tight circle at high speed. And lastly, while he has great lateral flexion on the ground, I have discovered that asking for the same bend while mounted makes him tense up, the head comes up, and the eyes go wild. I can only assume that this was used as a punishment for him in the past. I have been working very softly to correct this, trying to allow him to bend without force and to only hold it as long as he can without panic. Can you offer any advice?"
Well, number one, with a horse with that kind of a tendency, I would not ride. I would not ride that horse out. Okay, so if that's the case, the whole scenario right there, number one thing is your safety, and that you can, you know, be here tomorrow to help him, you know, through the situation. But I'll tell you what, you can do plenty of things. You can even go out on the ditches and have your horse on the ground and do lots of things along the ditches. That's why I call the one video in my series Riding from the Ground. People say, "Well, you know, I have this horse to ride. I want to go ride." Like, well, you know, that's like you coming over and going, "Well, sure, you can borrow my truck. You know, the brakes don't work and the emergency brake's been out, but sure, go ahead and use my truck. It'll probably be okay." You know, you don't have any brakes. There's no brakes installed. So that's the number one thing I would say, because your you know, well-being comes first over your enjoyment of a trail ride. So what I would do is go back to square one. And lateral flexion on the ground, you know, definition of good is kind of a relative thing. So some of the things that we're doing here at camp is, you know, if it's good, then, you know, I go, "Great, okay, that's good. Now do it this way. Now do it faster. Now do it, you know, sideways. Now do it upside down. You know, do it quickly." You know, people asking their horse for lateral flexion or lowering their head to the ground. Now, how fast can you get its head to the ground? When the horse starts getting under pressure, all of a sudden the horse goes, "Well, wait a minute. What happened to slow and ride and reward the slightest try?" And there's nothing wrong with that. But very quickly, that's not the horse's slightest try anymore. Or it is their slightest try, and you get stuck there. And the horse goes, "Well, you know, you're supposed to just, you know, a little give here." And you need to start asking more of that horse, putting him under pressure and saying, "Hey, I need you." That horse is smart enough that if you ask for lateral flexion quickly, even, you know, starting from the ground, take what he's doing well and ask for more, then it changes the deal a little bit, changes the conditions, and all of a sudden you'll see kind of how good it really is. You know, I should be able to walk up, and without my horse even putting 1 ounce of resistance on it, I should be able to walk up, take the rope very quickly, and bring my horse's head, you know, nose to my toes instantly. You know, even though that I didn't prepare the horse, you know, people go up and let them know it's coming, all that stuff. The fact is that sometimes you need to be able to put that horse's nose in a certain position in a hurry. You know, it may not be a behavior your horse has, but shoot, you know, you may be out riding and a herd of loose horses comes running up to you. You need to be able to do those things very, very quickly. And sometimes people that are, you know, taking a gentler approach with horses, there's absolutely nothing wrong with that, but don't get stuck there. Because then something happens and you have to do something quickly or abrupt or put the horse under pressure, and the horse is never used to being put under pressure. Because sometimes what we think is, well, pressure, the horse isn't going to like pressure, and so we never go there. Our tendency, especially as women, is to avoid it. And so we never go there, and the horse never learns that he can keep thinking through a pressure situation, which is really the ultimate safety with a horse. So the one rein stop up on the horse's back, I would keep practicing that until that horse is just so soft and willing, not just in absence of resistance, but a positive response to it. Because if your horse can't do that, even just in arena or sitting on them at home, boy, it doesn't take much out on a trail ride to you know, find out that that's a pretty significant hole that you may not survive. The other thing I can tell you about runaway horses or bolting horses, and I talked about this on my teleseminars before, is some people teach a way to, quote, safely jump off a runaway horse. Now, I don't disagree with that if the condition is that you are the horse is running towards certain depth, a cliff, a six-lane highway, you know, something like that. If the horse is running towards something that you cannot turn it and the best decision is to jump off, then absolutely do that. Now, if your horse is not running towards one of those things, to me, the safest thing to do is to see if you can stay on. The horse has already hit top speed. You probably can't go any faster by the time you realize you're in trouble. And if you keep a leg on each side and go the same speed, you just might still be on there when the thing stops. You know, the Atlantic's on one side, the Pacific's on the other. And usually a horse really, you know, won't go that far. Maybe they go all the way back to the barn. But I've been on runaway horses. And I'll tell you what, it's just, I grab everything to hang on, stay on, and I have a tool available on my website that I found and I offer to people. It's called a security strap. And it allows you, it's like a night latch, but it always has an opening, an easy opening that your hand can get into when you're in a panic situation. And you just hang on and see if you can't just, you know, still be on that horse. So don't bail off unless you absolutely have to. Because if you bail off, you're for sure going to fall off, you know. But if you hang on and stay on, you just might still be on there when the horse stops. So I've been on runaway horses, horseback and in teams, and, you know, bailing off is an option, but a lot of times people get the impression that's the best option. But what I would do is go back to the beginning and get things better and better and better, and I really would try not to put myself in a situation where a horse would bolt with me like that on a trail. So,
okay. Karen, I'm really glad that she's had that question and is getting help with that before she does get hurt. So
yeah.
That's just really important. And that latch that you mentioned, if you haven't seen that, certainly get on Karen's site and check that out. It's a really nifty little handle that you can hang on to. So very, very neat thing that you came about and found. So,
well, let me mention one more thing, because people will holler at you if you hang on to your saddle. And I ask audiences this all the time, you know, who's been yelled at for grabbing their saddle? Just about everybody's been yelled at. I'll tell you where I think that came from. If you hold on to the saddle horn when a horse is bucking, there's too much torque on it, and it'll pop your fingers open and actually pull you forward and unseat you. I think that's where it came from. But I'll tell you what, you don't see, you know, rodeo, rough stock, bareback riders. You don't see them not hanging on. They're hanging on for dear life. You're pulling themselves down. Oh, yeah, well, you shouldn't hang on. Well, sure you should hang on. And that's what a Cheyenne roll on the back of a Western saddle is for, is to hang on. That's what my lariat, the coils of my lariat are for. I'll grab onto that. I have a security strap on the left side. I don't care if you got to hang on to their left ear as you're flying over their head. You hang on to something if you can. So,
yeah. Well, that's
another one of those myths, episode 302.
Yeah, that security strap thing is pretty handy, though, so check that out. Okay, I've got a question from Elisa from Flagstaff. She's actually got a two-part question here, so I'm going to go ahead and let you deal with the first one, and we'll come back and pick up her second one because it's two different things. The first one deals with the mama's bite. She has a 14-year-old Arabian gelding, quarter horse gelding, that came to her with absolutely no manners about a year ago. He's doing great now. I started doing the mama's bite exercise, and he does it great, but then he pins his ears and does a yes-no move with his head. He's paying attention, and he does what I want, but he's mad about it. He's too smart for his own good and mine. What should I do when he's pinning his ears and having a little temper tantrum?
You know what? If a horse has time to pin its ears, you know, flip its nose at you, paw, things like that, then you're kind of giving them too much time. You're not asking enough of them. They're kind of going, there, I did it. So in the beginning, what you want to think about with a horse is in the beginning when you're teaching them, and I'll explain the mama's bite if people aren't familiar with it. You know, the mama horse bites the baby horse before it even stands up for the first time, because horses' communication between each other has little nips, not so much nudges, but little nips and driving and pinning the ears and things like that. So the mama's bite is just one bite, and as my group of folks here that are here for this week are finding out, that there's a huge level of awareness of being polite and offering the horse a chance using a wave of warning, then delivering a mama's bite, and then putting it down. The bite needs to be effective. It needs to be something that they don't want to feel again. So sometimes they can start pinning their ears and kind of snaking their head and having a little fit if your delivery of that mama's bite either isn't polite or it isn't really effective enough. Or maybe he's done it to that level enough times that he's going, you know, I could do more, but you're not really asking me to do more. And so it's like, you know, an 8-year-old kid in kindergarten. You know, he should be in third grade by now, you know. So he's not really being asked enough. So a lot of times kids in school get in trouble when, not because they're slow, but because they're too smart and the rest of the world isn't keeping up with them. And it sounds like you've, you know, picked up on that indication already. He's too smart for himself, you know, his own good and me. So the invitation is then to ask more of him. So when he starts snaking his head and doing all that kind of thing, say, great, you got time to do it again. Now do it faster. Now do it sideways. Now do it brisker. And when you start asking more of him, he'll start going, wow, you know what, you're kind of an interesting conversationalist. Okay? He'll start becoming more interested in the challenges that you're offering him. So it's kind of like kids who get in trouble in school. They oftentimes need to do more, not less. They get in trouble when they're doing less. So a lot of times, and this is across the board, we're not keeping up with the level of intelligence these horses have, none of us. Okay, or I'd be doing, you know, Levade, and, you know, I'd be, you know, doing all kinds of things, you know, differently with my horse. But I'm still learning, as everybody is, or should be. And that's the kind of thing that I would imagine. If that horse was in my hands, what would I ask it to do? I'd probably ask a lot more of it, only because my skill set is different. So that's kind of the invitation. Don't get stuck doing the same thing over and over and over because the horse goes, I did it like I've done it 1,000 times. If I have to do this again, I'm going to choke somebody. Okay? Ask him to do more. He doesn't have time to snake his head and pin his ears at me. He needs to move, not in a minute, but right now. So there, I did a series of workshops here in Phoenix area this winter, and I called it the 5 most misunderstood techniques with horses, and one of them was around kind of boring the horse to tears, you know, not really asking that much and getting stuck in the reward the slightest try thing. Some people get stuck in reward the slightest try for years, and all of a sudden I was asking people to do this and do that and do more of it, brisker, faster, you know, and all of a sudden these horses kind of lit up and said, oh, thank goodness, I've been in third grade for 10 years. Okay? So to me, that's an indication that the horse really could do more, or he wouldn't have time to do that. Hopefully that'll help you with that behavior.
Okay. And Karen, I think she's also got another side of this that you're going to have to address here, because with her other question, I think we've got some fear going on, because when he does that, then she may be back and back down from it, because it says with the other question, it boils down to, can you ever get over the fear you have with one particular horse after things have gone downhill for over the years? She said she had a mare that has no confidence in her, and now she doesn't have any in her. Neither one of them have confidence in each other. So she just sits. But it may carry over to this other horse, you know, doing a little bit of bluffing, too, so with that fear.
Well, and remember, the horse isn't bluffing. He's telling you that you're just not that good yet. Horses don't lie, you know. They're not bluffing, but behaviors get reinforced. So it's kind of the thing, and I think that's what you're describing there, Melinda. I use this comparison. How many times does it take to give a kid a candy bar in a grocery store before you have a problem? You know, kids, a child is pitching a fit. I don't want to get anywhere. And they all try it, you know, just once. And if you give them, go, okay, Johnny, just be quiet. I'll give you the candy bar. Oh, man, you're done.
Yeah.
Right? So what happens with horses is we inadvertently shape behaviors because we don't know what to do. We're afraid of doing it wrong. We're afraid of hurting the horse or the horse not liking us. And so our pattern, is, especially as women, is one of avoidance. And so what happens, I'll give you an example. The horse gets scared and starts jumping around like a marlin and pulling on the lead line. We back away and go, oh, don't ever do that again. That scares that horse. And I know we do that because I've done it myself. You know, early on I went, oh my gosh, I don't know what's wrong with this horse, but whatever I did to cause it, I better never do it again. And I end up with this big, huge list of never do this around this horse, right? But that's only because I didn't know how to help the horse move through that. Because horses are motivated by comfort, you can actually teach a horse through this conditioned response. You can teach them the most amazing things, like even something like fear behavior. And if you go onto the website and look at the newsletter, it's an early newsletter, and it's a story about a horse named Scout. This horse was so fearful that you'd walk in the stall and he'd just be trembling. And the woman was really wanting some help and didn't know what to do. And I interacted with the horse a couple of times. And I said, you know what? I said, this horse is not afraid. She said, what are you talking about? Look at him. He's trembling. His eyes are wide. And I said, no. I said, you know what? He's not afraid. I said, when he gets afraid, what do you do? And she says, I back off. Okay. And what she didn't realize she was doing is conditioning the horse to actually have a fear behavior. That's how a horse learns, is not by the pressure you put on them, but by what behavior they're demonstrating when you take the pressure away or give them comfort or release, however it is you want to call it. So she had given the horse release consistently over 2 years so often that the horse would have fear behavior because of it. That's probably the most extreme example. But the invitation is then to get help, to get the videos and study the videos. You know, it amazes me for how much knowledge and information are in my videos that people go, oh, you know, I really don't learn by video, or, you know, that's not going to really help my horse. And then people get the videos and go, oh my gosh, my relationship is completely transformed, you know. People who are going to sell their horse, they just finally got desperate enough to get the videos and said, you know, oh my gosh, you know, why didn't I get these years ago? And if you don't like the videos, send them back to me. I don't want you to have them if you don't like them or they don't work for you. But if I didn't tell you to get that kind of knowledge and study it, just watch it once and go, okay, well, you know, I got it. It's something to study and really watch and pick apart and take different pieces from those. And that right there could probably get that horse out of the pasture and back in your hands and back into having an enjoyable interaction with. These horses are too special to us and too valuable, too expensive, not just financially but emotionally, to not have the full use of them. And really, just the thing that most people are missing is the instruction manual. You know, we have everything else, but we forgot to get the instructions. So that's really what I would recommend.
Okay. So, and I'm going to kind of add to those videos because I was using a lot of excuses. I just don't have time to sit down and watch those. I can't do that. And just keeping them turned on when you're doing the other stuff in the house, you're getting another layer of information. And it's funny, you'll be not even realizing you're listening to it, and then something will catch your, oh, and then you'll go back and rewind that. And wait, what was that? So, you know, don't let that be an excuse for you if you don't think you've got time. Just turn it on, and you'll be amazed what you pick up on it. So,
well, I have to tell you, Melinda, something funny is I'll play them every so often because I'm always thinking, okay, how do I say something better? How can I create a new video to get an idea across to people? And I'll watch my own videos and go, wow, I said that?
Well, that's pretty good.
You know, and I go, wow, that was good.
Yeah.
Well, that finally makes sense now.
Yeah. Oh, gosh. So, well, Karen, I cannot believe how quickly time is going. So wind is still blowing, but time has gone fast. So I've got another question here, and then I'm going to kind of talk a little bit before I give you a chance to answer that, if it's okay. This question is, when will you be in the Northeast this summer at all doing clinics? And I felt like this is a really good time for me to give you an opportunity to talk about, you know, everybody wants to know, when's Karen coming to the area? And Karen has created this, a create a clinic format. And so you guys can decide when you want to make the clinic happen and who you want to be in it. And so what Karen's doing, and Karen, do you want to kind of jump in there and tell them at this point what you're doing? Or?
Sure. Okay. You know, I get this question all the time. What I've done in the last few years is I book presentations at the large expos, so Hoosier Horse Fair, Equine Affairs, Midwest Horse Fair, all these events. And because I live on the road with my horses and my rig and everything, what I would do, it, you know, it makes sense, is to stay out on the road and I would book clinics between the expos. So, but what I, the disadvantage of it is that, you know, people in certain areas, if I didn't route through there on my travels, they were just kind of left out. Well, this year I'm going to do things a little bit differently, and I'm going to be flying out to the events, to clinics and some of the expos. If I can drive to it, I will, because I certainly enjoy that. But with fuel prices and things like that, you know, I'm just going to try it a little bit differently this year. So what we did is we came up with a format called Create a Clinic. And it's really simple because all you're doing is arranging for the speaker fee for me to come out plus expenses, and then you sell all the rider spots, all the auditor tickets, and you basically can host a clinic with a group of people or alone, make it as a fundraiser for you know, a nonprofit group or even a for-profit group. A tax store could book a clinic and make it another revenue stream for their business. And basically, I'm just paid a flat speaker fee, a $1,000 deposit, books the weekend, and you can start selling the tickets. Or you can, you know, make it to where people say, well, I really want to have an advancing clinic with just me and my, you know, six friends. You can do that too. So you just pay, again, pay the speaker fee and the expenses. So it doesn't really matter how large the event you want it to be or how small or how private you want it to be. It's just kind of a straight across, you know, straight across the board fee, so it makes everything really, really simple. We still help promote it, put it on the website, do mailings, you know, all those kinds of things. It's not like, okay, well, good luck, you're on your own. But it's really a good way to do a fundraiser. I have a pony club that's using it as their, you know, annual fundraiser. They said, oh, good, we don't have to sell burritos anymore. You know, we can do something significant and bring education to our area. So I will absolutely go anywhere, you know, and I can go anywhere in the schedule. People say, well, when are you going to be in Oregon? Well, when do you want me to be in Oregon? You know, I'll be there because I'm just flying out and back. So it simplifies things all the way around. I know I'm going to miss my rig and my horses, but we're just going to try this format this year and see how this goes because, you know, like I said, the folks that are, you know, up on the Northeast, and I've had people want me to come up to Maine, well, that's a long drive. You know, I'd love to get there, but, you know, now I have the flexibility to be able to do that. So that's really the format. It's called Create a Clinic. You can go on the website, get all the details on it. And like I said, a $1,000 deposit books it, you know, gets the weekend. We start the helping promotion. You start promoting it, selling it. And I think people are really excited about it already. We have several bookings already, but you can find out more there.
Yeah. And I know, Karen, you're going to be coming to Indiana. We've kind of met, and we're working on getting some details and some dates on that. So anybody that's listening that's close in the Indiana area, make sure you get a hold of Karen through the Can We Talk email, and I'll know that you're interested in that, and we'll try to get you added into our clinic. Like I say, we haven't scheduled the date yet, but we've got several people interested, and we'll let you do the flying.
Yeah, I'll do the flying. Well, I'll tell you what, I'll tell you folks in Indiana, you better book a couple of clinics because that last clinic, and there's a maximum of 15 riders. That's my only requirement.
I know.
I had 23 horses in that clinic, and those guys were like, okay, let's prop her up and keep on going, which I don't mind. I just don't feel like I can get to everybody. But so there's a maximum number of riders that I do have, but from the response and level of interest in your area there, Melinda, we may want to book a couple of weekends.
Well, I told Mark you may just be here for a month. I think we're going to just spend the whole month here. So
Well, we can do that too.
Yeah, and then and so if anyone's interested in Create a Clinic, you better get in there quick. But and then I actually talked to someone, and I think she's listening in tonight, and we're talking for 2010 schedule. So we're working on that next year too for you. So
that's great.
Yeah, so you'll be going there. So, well, we're getting close to coming to 9 o'clock. Karen, do you have anything you would like to conclude in this? And I've got three more questions I'm not sure that we have time for. We may want to stick those back for next month. Anything exciting going on over at the clinic next week? Can they still jump in on that?
Well, actually, there are some openings for next week's course. It is an advancing course. There are several folks from this group that are going to stay on into next week. But I'll tell you what, it started off with, you know, pretty rainy up here, and now it is just absolutely beautiful. It's just absolutely perfect, and everybody is learning so much. I just really appreciate it. And it's not just because you guys are listening in the other room. I'm just really having a ball with everybody. I think everybody is finding that they're really surprised how much they're able to do with their horses in really such a short amount of time. And everybody's just really supportive of each other, the whole environment. And this is one of my favorite times of the year when I can spend a whole week with people and really give them the lasting results with their horses that they're looking for.
Okay. Well, Karen, if I happen to call you and say, hey, I'm in Arizona, come to the airport, get me.
Hey, we will buzz down there.
It's
a short trip. There are people here from Ohio, Oregon, Arizona. I mean, just all over the place. It's really an amazing group of people. People didn't know each other, and everybody's come in, and they're just, you know, fast friends. And there's nothing like horses. And like I said to the group, I said, you know, there's every kind of interest in horses, but there's very few people that their main interest is in the education and the psychology of horses. I said you're a very a fairly rare group of people that would make the effort that you've made to be able to come here and be much better communicators for your horse. I mean, that's the motivation of everybody, but everybody is just doing their best and trying their guts out, and they're just absolutely doing fantastic.
Oh,
and I'm not just saying that, you guys.
Oh, I know. If you've not been to a clinic, I mean, they're just really fantastic, and you really ought to try to get out there. So, and as of you probably can tell, I would be there if I didn't have this face the fear of flying thing that I got to get over. So we're going to do it.
But you're not flying. You're just sitting on a bus.
It's just a bus.
That's why I told you. It's just a bus.
I'm not flying. I need to go control that plane.
I heard about a city bus in downtown Phoenix, let me tell you.
So, I don't know. I may surprise you. So, I'm getting some pets off to try to get out there. So, I know it's going to be worth it once I'm, you know, there. That Bumblebee Ranch looks wonderful. Looks like a really neat place to be. So.
It's really a great place. And you know what, Melinda, just think of this. What will it feel like when you fly out here, have an amazing time, you fly back, and you'll have that experience passed you. You know, it's just something you haven't done yet.
Yeah.
You know, So everybody's out here dealing with, you know, every kind of fear and, you know, every kind of thing you can imagine. But, you know, I can take you and you know, move you through it, you know. So.
Yeah. Wait, you want to fly to Indiana and fly back out with me? Well, you might do that.
Fly with you?
Isn't that crazy?
Sure, I'd be right there with you. You'd be right on that plane, and I'd be sitting right there with you. You go, okay.
There you go. So we really appreciate everybody joining in tonight. We hope we've got your questions answered. We appreciate everybody emailing all those questions, and we're trying to get to those as quickly as we can. So keep those emails coming. Don't give up. We'll definitely try to get to your questions as soon as we can. So any last things for you, Karen?
No, I can't tell you how much I enjoy the teleseminars and really appreciate everybody dialing and listening in. It really gladdens my heart to know that there are so many people that are trying to be better communicators for their horse. It really, really does. And I really try to encourage other people to listen in or go on the website, download it, listen to it that way if you know, dialing in right now is not the most convenient time for them. We really want to just share knowledge. That is, you can tell, you know, I'm so excited about having the opportunity to help people. It's really my true love. The only thing I love more than horses is people. and that's a lot. And I don't care what your experiences, background, fears, what, you know, anything. It doesn't matter to me. My intent is to take you from wherever you're at, and help you reach your goals with horses. Not my goal for you, but whatever your goal is with horses. I'll help you in the best way I know how.
Well, Karen, we really appreciate that. We know it's very obvious your passion, and I certainly say thank you for taking the time out to share your knowledge with all of us. So
you're welcome. You're welcome.
Okay. Well, you have a good clinic tomorrow, and I'll be thinking about you guys. And
Okay. Hopefully
we don't get blown away here in Indiana.
Yeah. Burrow in there. Light another candle and hang on to each other.
That's right. Happy Valentine's Day.
Yeah. Happy Valentine's Day, you too. Thank you so much, Melinda.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.